Today, return to plan A for now, says the market, as new data swings. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, one of those posts covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update, where we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia, and then Australia. We're also covering the action in commodities and crypto along the way. My analogy of traders on a boat running from one side of the deck to the other still holds, as the recession iceberg melts away, at least for now, and an immaculate US soft landing is back in vogue. The change in sentiment was driven by a flurry of data, which showed US economic resilience, and this drove stocks to their best week this year, coupled with dip buyers stepping in after the recent rout. So Wall Street posted its best seven-day run in almost 2 years, while the VIX slid back to 1480. Of course, traders have struggled to forecast where the economy is headed, and the recession fears that helped drive the recent pullback could resurface again just as quickly as they faded. On top of that, the US election and geopolitical tensions are adding other elements of uncertainty. But beneath the surface, there are some reassuring signals. Specifically, the latest jobs data was better than the previous ones. The CPI data showed a drift in the right direction, along with producer prices. Consumer sentiment improved with the August University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey reading 67.8, up from July 66.4, and retail sales were also up. Just don't mention the poor construction data with weak July housing starts and building permits. Central bankers are being, quote, data dependent. So no surprise then that when new data arrives, traders change tack. The Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago president on Friday told National Public Radio that the US economy is not showing signs of overheating. So central bank officials should be wary of keeping restrictive policy in place longer than necessary. You don't want to tighten any longer than you have to, Goldspeed said. And the reason you want to tighten is if you're afraid the economy is overheating. And this is not what an overheating economy looks like to me. It's also worth noting that the earlier sell-off hit a relatively small slice of the market, with nowhere near the breadth of the rout set off by the Fed's rate hikes, the pandemic, or other pivotal events. And while valuations are at risk of another recalibration, if the economy does wind up spluttering, the S&P 500 during the recent retreat held above a threshold that, to technical analysts at least, telegraphs investors' continued confidence. The Dow Jones ended up 0.24%. The S&P 500 rose to around 5,555, and that's up 0.2%. And for the year, the S&P 500 is up more than 16% and is within about 2% from its July all-time closing high. The Nasdaq rose 0.2%. Most megacaps gained, with Nvidia leading the charge at 1.4%, and it's actually bounced more than 20% from its recent lows, while the Philadelphia SE Semiconductor Index has gained more than 14% from its lows. Small cap shares, which had been strong performers in July, have also recovered from recent lows, with the Russell 2000 up nearly 5%. Nike had its longest winning streak in more than 8 years and was up 0.88% on the day, although Applied Materials sank 1.86% after a sales forecast that disappointed investors looking for a bigger payout from artificial intelligence spending. If you are an AI fan like Wedbush, then the outlook looks rosy, saying the tech sector is on the brink of substantial growth, underpinned by the expanding influence of AI. Just remember the Cisco, though. The firm emphasized the foundational role of cloud and AI technologies in the ongoing fourth industrial revolution. Treasury 10-year yield slid to 3.891%, while the 2-year was last at 4.054%. And there was an uptick in safe haven demand for treasuries on Friday, mainly due to geopolitical risk factors such as the Middle East situation and the Russia-Ukraine war. An inverted yield curve is generally seen as pointing to a recession, and during the market freakout last week, hopes of an aggressive September easing shifted the gap between the 2 and the 10-year yields to a positive 1.5 basis points, the first time the curve had a more normal upward slope since July 2022. The dollar had its third straight week of losses, the longest streak since March, with the DXY at 102.4. Hedge funds turned bullish on Japanese currency for the first time since 2021 after sharp swings in foreign exchange markets led to a blow-up of a popular yen trade. The likelihood of a Federal Reserve interest rate cut in September is all but guaranteed. However, the question now centers on whether the Fed will cut 25 basis points or follow through with a jumbo 50 basis points cut. We may well know more after Jackson Hole's central bankers luncheon next week. Overall, the data shows that while the odds were essentially even last week between the two potential cuts, traders are now mainly betting on the smaller of the two cuts. We think a key highlight of Powell's speech will be the acknowledgement that progress on inflation has been sufficient to allow the start of rate cuts, economists at BNP Paribas said in a note on Thursday. Gold futures hit $2,546, bolstered by hopes that the Fed is edging closer to cutting rates, and of course, as a safe haven. Oil prices settled down nearly 2% on Friday. Little changed on the week, actually, with Brent crude below $80 a barrel, as investors tempered expectations of demand growth from top oil importer China. Brent crude futures fell to settle at $79.65 per barrel. US West Texas Intermediate crude futures declined to $76.59. On Thursday, data from China showed its economy lost momentum in July, with new home prices falling at the fastest pace in 9 years, industrial output slowing, and unemployment rising. That has stoked worries among traders about a slump in demand from the top oil importer, where refineries sharply cut crude processing rates last month on tepid fuel demand. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries on Monday cut its forecast for this year's oil demand growth, citing softness in China. And the Paris-based International Energy Agency also cited weak demand in China when it slashed its 2025 forecast on Tuesday. Oil futures rallied at the start of the week as traders braced for retaliation by Iran against Israel over the slaying of a Hamas leader in Tehran last week. But some of that risk was priced out because Iran has not struck back yet. Provided the situation in the Middle East does not escalate further, the oil price is likely to tread water, Commerzbank analysts said. The natural gas market is currently facing a complex set of challenges that are shaping its outlook for the near future. Persistent supply threats, particularly from Russian sources, have continued to support elevated prices. However, despite those drivers, the sector's outlook remains clouded by several major obstacles. The combination of increased demand due to slower than anticipated global economic growth and moderate supply surpluses, as reflected in recent data, does not suggest huge price appreciation in the very short term, according to analysts. The natural gas market remains highly intricate, though, with various forces at play that could influence its direction in the coming months, actually up or down. European markets also did well this week, with the pan-European Stoxx 600 index up 0.3% on the day, still hovering at its two-week high and logging its best week since May the 6th. For the week, the index was up 2.4% and erased the losses seen in the past couple of weeks. The tech sector, which was one of the most affected by the recent rout, had its longest winning streak in more than 6 months. The DAX was at 18,300, while the CAC 40 in France was at 7,449.70. London's FTSE was the weakest among its major European peers, ticking 0.4% lower after British retail sales rose 0.5% in July, in line with forecasts, and growth was looking a little stronger. The automobile sector was the top gainer for the day, rising 1.2%, boosted by gains at Ferrari, which rose 3.1%, and Stellantis, that gained 1.9%, despite the European American automaker being sued by shareholders in the US, who said the firm defrauded them by concealing rising inventories and other weaknesses. Analysis at Bank of America Securities maintains a very cautious stance on European equities and cyclical stocks versus defensive. They predict a further decline in the Stoxx 600 index with a target of 475 by the end of 2024, reflecting a potential 10% downside. Most Asian stocks surged on Friday, tracking an overnight rally on Wall Street as strong US economic data helped quell fears of a recession, while bets on interest rate cuts still remained in play. Japan's Nikkei 225 and TOPIX indices were the best performers in Asia, rising 3.2% and 2.5% respectively. They were also the best performers in Asia this week. Both indices added more than 7%. as they rebounded from four straight weeks of steep losses, which also saw them enter a bear market. Sentiment towards Japan improved this week on stronger than expected gross domestic product data for the second quarter, which showed the economy was picking up amid improving wages and personal spending. But Japanese stocks are still haunted by that bear market, with analysts at JP Morgan warning that recent gains were driven chiefly by domestic buying and that foreign investors remain cautious over buying back in Japan. Japanese investment data on Friday confirmed what the sliding yen had been pointing to all week, that after a scary burst of turmoil, global investors were back to betting on the Bank of Japan going slow on rate rises and on the yen staying cheap. The yen has also been sliding steadily this week, ending its sharp rally in early August after the Bank of Japan's surprisingly hawkish tones on further rate rises, combined with US recession fears, to spark an aggressive unwinding of the yen financial carry trades. The yen was at 147.60 on Friday, far from the 38-year low struck last month, but equally well below the high of 141.675 yen hit on August the 5th. The sharp swings have continued to support high volatility, and such volatility usually derails carry trades. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index rose 1.6%, buoyed by a nearly 8% surge in JD.com after the e-commerce retailer clocked much stronger than expected June quarter earnings, but was still, of course, way down from it late last year. Rival Alibaba Group rose 3.6%, even as its June quarter earnings missed estimates. The stock was boosted by speculation that Alibaba will upgrade its Hong Kong listing to make it eligible for buying by mainland Chinese investors later this month, which could attract a swathe of inflows for the stock through the southbound Stock Connect. But Chinese markets lagged as mixed economic readings from the country kept investors adverse to local stocks. The Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite Indices both rose just 0.1%. Mainland Chinese stocks took little support from more pledges of stimulus from the People's Bank of China, and the central bank is set to decide on its benchmark loan prime rate next week after unexpectedly cutting the rate in July to boost growth. Several Chinese banks have been given new gold import quotas from the central bank, anticipating revived demand despite recent record prices. The new quotas, aimed at helping the People's Bank of China control how much bullion enters the world's leading consumer of the precious metal, were granted in August after a two-month pause, largely due to slower physical demand in the wake of a bullish market. Spot gold has gained 21% so far this year, having hit successive record highs, striking a peak of $2,500 per ounce. Strong Chinese buying was a key factor in bullion's March to April rally, and if demand picks up again, it could further boost prices, according to analysts. China's central bank held back on buying gold for its reserves for a third straight month in July, though, and gold holdings stood at 72.8 million fine troy ounces at the end of last month. The PBOC was the world's largest single buyer of gold in 2023, with net purchases of 7.23 million ounces, according to the World Gold Council. South Korea's KOSPI surged 1.8% in catch-up trade on Friday, and India's Nifty 50 index was at 1.65% after a holiday on Thursday. In Australia, shares notched their sixth straight session of gains on Friday as investors took confidence that the US economy would avoid a recession, supporting the earnings outlook. On Friday, the ASX 200 rose 1.3% to 7,971.1 points. For the week, the index jumped 2.4% as profits broadly delivered on expectations and bond yields eased. National Australia Bank rose 1.5% to $36.48 after it posted a third quarter cash profit of $1.75 billion, in line with analysts' forecasts. It appears that NAB has sharpened its Australian home loan pricing over the past month to deal with mortgage market share loss, so there may be some net interest margin pressure to come from this over the next 6 months, said analysts at Evans & Partners. The element of increasing concern is asset quality. Despite the bad debt charge being lower than expected, there continues to be broad-based deterioration in the business lending portfolios, they said. Certainly, delinquent loans at National Australia Bank jumped higher in the June quarter as the highest interest rate in a decade and persistent inflation creates a challenging environment for borrowers. the lender said non-performing loans were 1.31% from 1.2% of its book at June the 30th, reflecting continued broad-based deterioration in business and private banking, combined with high arrears for the Australian mortgage portfolio. But then again, NAB Chief Executive Andrew Irvine said that the increase in late repayments was, quote, unsurprising, but the bank was well provisioned with credit impairment charges at $180 million for the quarter. CBA, ANZ and Westpac were also higher, clawing back towards recent highs, actually, despite the RBA's assertion that there will be no rate cuts this year. See my show where I pulled apart the governor's comments to the House Economics Committee last Friday. Macquarie also tracked higher to a 209.75. The materials sector, dominated by the big iron ore miners, also rebounded. The sector finished up 2.2% to claw back some heavy losses this week as the major miners sank in tandem with an iron ore price that dropped to its lowest level since 2022 on worries over the health of China's economy. BHP rallied 2% to $40.01, with energy giant Woodside firming 2.4% to $26.12. Elsewhere, shares in the ASX edged up 0.1% to $64.06 after the exchange reported an underlying profit of $474.2 million. That's slightly down on last year, while revenue hit a record high of $1.03 billion. The Aussie was at 66.69 cents against the US dollar and 51.52 cents against the pound. Finally, Bitcoin, the world's biggest and best-known cryptocurrency, rose 5.17% to 59,408 at the time of writing. It's actually up 54.8% from the year's low of 38,505 back in January. And Ether pretty much followed suit, but of course, the volatility in the crypto markets continues and the future trajectory is uncertain, which I think you can also expand to the broader markets. We are going to see more of this change of tune from positive to negative and back over the next few months. And certainly there are opportunities potentially as this plays out, but also risks. And I'd continue to remind you that September and October tend to be the most risky months of the year. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.